Anybody need lesson 18? We've got some up here. There's some back there on the table. And if you have the map that we passed out way back there in someone ever, July last year, January this year, it might help to look at those maps. We got some that I want to show you something on today. And you can see them up here, but it's not as easy to see as what you're holding in your hand. Lesson 18. Lesson 18 covers chapters 9, 10, and 11 of Joshua. If you look at lesson 18 on page 2, at the bottom of it, we spend a little bit of time talking about, number 5 is summary and a question of ethics. Down the bottom of page 2, the summary about how premillennialists don't think that Joshua and the people possess the land. We talked about that a little bit last week. We're not going to look at it again today. And last week I mentioned that we would look at the information that begins in the middle of page 3. But I've changed my lesson plan for today. I didn't hear. Good, you'll be ready for it next week. I thought it would be, after thinking about it again, after last week, I thought, well, it might be better to go ahead and look at the events on the first page of lesson 18 before we look at the events or the information on page 3 and 4. So that's what I want to do today. And we've read chapter 9 and 10, right? And 11 of Joshua. Not here in class. The covenant of the Gibeonites, there on page 1, it's kind of an interesting situation. Let's see if I can see something here on this map. It's not as complicated as the map that I handed out, but the map that I handed out, I'll show you in a minute. The people over here took the land of the defeated King Og and Sihon over here, and then they moved across the Jordan River, and Gilgal, as it's shown on this map, is where, if you've been reading ahead, is where the people are camped out and where Joshua leads the people into battle, first of all against Jericho and then against Ai. And then they come back to Gilgal, and they go up to Mount Ebal and Mount Shechem, not Mount, it's the city of Shechem, Mount Gerizim and Ebal. Shechem is in the middle there. And they had the raw red. Moses told them to go and do that in Deuteronomy. So that's what they do. Some of the people on Mount Ebal, not actually on the mount, but out at the foot of the mount, and some at Gerizim. Joshua built an altar on Mount Ebal. And then they come back to Gilgal. And something happens before they go anywhere else, and that's chapter 9. And some people, and it's not on this map here, but we'll look at it in just a moment. These other red lines show that they went down into the southern area, and then they went up to the northern areas to fight with the different city kings. This map here is the one that's kind of all jumbled up, but if you look at it a little bit, it'd be a fairly reasonable to understand. Here's the Dead Sea, all of it, the Jericho and Gilgal here, Ai, and then they go up to Mount Gerizim, and they come back down, Mount Gerizim and Ebal, and they come back down to Gilgal. And some people over here in Gibeon, what did they decide to do? Gibeon here, let me point out first of all, Gibeon will be something that will come up, and then these kings in this area here, there's five kings that are going to attack Gibeon, but before that, something comes up with the Gibeonites. What did they decide to do? Ken? So the Gibeonites have heard something, and they base their actions on believing what they've heard. And so we're going to find out what it is in just a moment. Go ahead, Ted.
Didn't they try to pull off a ruse, like trying to make themselves look
desperate? They developed a plan of trickery, right? What was it that they had heard that Ken was talking about that they believed? They'd heard about the fall of Jericho and Ai, and did they hear, I may be getting it with someone else, did they hear about the people leaving Egypt with Moses? Maybe they don't mention that. There's another people that later on in this text, 9 and 10 and 11, that does that. Anyway, they have heard. We've heard what happened with you people. And so they devised a ruse or something that would make them look like they were from where?
A long way off.
And what was it? There were about three or four things that they did that made them look like they had traveled for a good distance. Okay, their wine sacks had burst, or at least had worn out to some extent. What else?
Dry bread.
I'm sorry?
Dry bread.
Their bread had become dry, and I guess we could say moldy, but anyway, dry and crumbly. That's two.
They wore old clothes and sandals.
Their clothes looked like they were old and had worn them for a long time. Their sandals were worn. And they kept their old things. They placed when they were at home, and they wore the new things. But now they put their old things back on. I don't know if that's what they did, but anyway. Or they intentionally made them look like they were worn, but whatever, they disguise themselves, in essence, to look like they had come from a long journey. And so they told Joshua and the people that they had heard of how they had conquered this territory and so forth and so on, and we want to make a covenant with you, right? Is that what they wanted to do? And Joshua and the people reasoned a little bit, but what was the first thing? Well, not necessarily the first thing. One thing that Joshua and the people did not do that they should have done.
Talk to God.
They should have talked to God before they made any plans with these Gibeonites. Is that a pretty good lesson or point for us today? Before we go about doing something that it could be very well be good, but whether it is or not, we may not know even if it will be good, not knowing what the future holds. We need to talk to God like Joshua and the people didn't. But what was the reasoning after they didn't think to talk to God? What was the reasoning that they went ahead and made an agreement with these Gibeonites? Yeah, not exactly what my question was looking for, but in the 9th chapter, I want to read verse 7, but let's start with verse 3. When the inhabitants of Gibeon heard that Joshua had done to Jericho and to Ai, we've talked about that, they, on their part, acted with cunning. This is this newer version I'm reading from. They acted with cunning. What does cunning mean? Crafty? Crafty? Other versions have other words there. And went and made ready provisions and took worn-out sacks for their donkeys and wineskins worn out and torn and mended with worn-out patched sandals on their feet and worn-out clothes. And all their provisions were dry and crumbly. So this one uses the word provision, and I got the word bread somewhere, didn't I? Others, bread usually is a term that is generic in the sense it's food. And they went to Joshua, this is verse 6, in the camp at Gilgal. Did I mention a while ago when I had the map up there that Gilgal seems to be the place from which Joshua and the people go here and they come back and they go here and they go back and so on? Okay, so that's where Joshua and the people are. And when these Gibeonites come to him, they knew where they were camped out, so to speak. So they went to Joshua, verse 6, in the camp at Gilgal and said to him and to the men of Israel, "We have come from a distant country, so now make a covenant with us." But the men of Israel said to the Hivites, "Perhaps you live among us. Then how can we make a covenant with you?" They said to Joshua, "We are your servants." And Joshua said to them, "Who are you? And where do you come from?" And they said to him, "From a very distant country your servants have come, because of the name of the Lord your God. For we have heard a report of him and all that he did in Egypt, and all that he did to the two kings of the Amorites that are beyond the Jordan, Sihon king of Heshbon and Og king of Bashan, and who lived in Ashtaroth. So our elders and all the inhabitants of our country said, 'Let's take provision in our hand and go and do a journey and meet them and say to them, we are your servants. Come now, let's make a covenant.'" So they tell Joshua and the people, this is what we've heard. And so we've come from a far country and we want to make a covenant with you. Do you suppose, let's see, I think that verse Verse 7, but the men of Israel said to the Hivites, perhaps you live among us.
Ding, 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 ding.
But Brian said that kind of might have struck a thought in their mind, but it didn't stay there, and they went ahead and listened to these guys, and they, not having, as we've already pointed out, inquired of God first. So did they go ahead and make the covenant?
Yes.
They did, didn't they?
Yep.
Okay. Now, Joshua and the people both were involved in this. It says Joshua one time, then it says the people here another. In that verse 7, I think I just read, the men of Israel said to the Hivites. So they made the covenant, and they go ahead and describe, I just look in here, they go ahead and describe, their bread is still warm when we took it from our houses, our food for the journey, and we came out. Behold, it's dry and crumbly, this version says. Same with the wineskins there in verse 13. So, Joshua, verse 15. Joshua made peace with them and made a covenant with them to let them live, and the leaders of the congregation swore to them. So the scene is set for the next thing that happens in chapter 10. So, several things there that we've already mentioned. Talk to God first. Brian, did you want to say something?
Well, we don't have to guess about talking to God first, because 14 says, and did not ask for the counsel of the Lord.
Right, yeah,
straight out.
Yeah, I didn't read that when I was reading there. Verse 14, for they didn't ask the counsel of God. It's an interesting question here on the sheet, number one. Go ahead, Ted.
What is the difference the Gibeonites would have figured out that they would have found out that they were close by sooner or later? You know, they're just going to, how do they think they're going to stay in? Didn't
matter.
Let's see if we can think about what Ted said there. Let's see, first of all, if I understood it. Ted, you said, wouldn't you think the Gibeonites would have thought, well, these guys will find out that we're not from a foreign country? Maybe so. They might have thought that. I don't know. But what is there about a covenant?
Binding.
Do you think it would be binding where if they did find out, they wouldn't be able to because of the covenant?
On that hangs what's going to happen here. But question number one, how does the adage, two wrongs don't make a right, fit these circumstances? With the Israelites, when they do find out that the Gibeonites trick them, well, the covenant's not valid, right?
No, they said they had to honor it.
They had to honor it.
They had to honor it because they swore by the God of Israel.
That's right.
They swear to God.
And so they, so the first wrong was making the covenant with them before inquiring of God. The second wrong would have been to break that covenant, right? So two wrongs don't make a right. That's what this number one question is talking about here. Brian, oh, I thought you were raising your head.
No.
Mo?
Swore, Gibeonites deceiving them was a wrong, and the Israelites believing it and making that covenant was wrong.
Yeah.
So that's two wrongs.
Two wrongs, and as I said, making the covenant and then breaking it, making the covenant in the name of God and then breaking it would have been two wrongs. Yep. So.
But if they had gone and talked to God in the first place, this wouldn't have taken place. If they would have conferred with him in the first place, he's the boss.
Is that the implication here?
Yes.
Probably is.
They basically did judgment on their own.
They did.
Yep. There is always a price to pay when you don't go to God.
There's a price to pay, Joyce says, when you don't go to God. Ken?
But Joshua went ahead and held to what they believed was right to do. So there he's acting rightly. But it's making peace for those people that had come to him. And so... surprised one time when I said that I had such a cold heart because of the commandments and all this, and I thought of myself.
Yeah, yeah.
Here's Joshua then, that is painting a picture of what God's going to do out of love for Gentiles later.
That might be so. I don't know if the scripture would point that out, but go ahead, Mo.
Weren't the Israelites told in the beginning not to make a covenant with anyone in Canaan? So they broke that covenant.
Right. God, Mo correct in saying that God had told the people, you don't make a covenant with any of the people in the land?
Correct.
I think they were assuming they were
outside of.
Yeah, they made the wrong assumption in what they're doing. Kelly points out they were assuming that these guys were outside of the land, but
they were not. Well, why would they want to make a covenant with them if they were outside of the land? They didn't use their noggin.
Yeah.
They didn't inquire of the Lord.
They didn't inquire. That's right. We're getting some feedback here. Mo, go ahead.
No, I'll save mine for later.
Okay. Well, this one's not on. Go ahead, Brian.
Kelly reminded me of Psalm 15:4, which we had some sermons on a while back. He swears to his own hurt and does not change.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps that's what the Israelites are doing here. Once they find out they made a no-no, they're going to keep their covenant.
Yeah.
It's going to hurt them.
It's going to hurt, but it's
to an extent.
They don't change. Go ahead, Ken.
They said that they were servants.
Yeah, we're your servants.
And that would mean if they're their servants, they're going to stay with them.
That's right. But the word servant there, we're your servants. We're coming from a foreign country. They would put themselves on a lower plane, so to speak, acting as if we're, what's the word I'm looking for, humble. We want you to make a covenant with us. But anyway, we'll find out what happens to them in just a moment. Did I see another hand? Okay, so now the Gibeonites are under the protection of a covenant, so to speak. And these people down here are going to hear about it in chapter 10. Let's see if we can get the verses there in chapter 10. Maybe not read them all. Chapter 10. Where did I want to begin? We'll just start the first verse. 10 verse 1. So as soon as Adonizedek, king of Jerusalem, heard how Joshua had captured Ai and devoted it to destruction, destroying Ai, he feared greatly because Gibeon. Okay, that's where we get to. So this king heard about what, just like the Gibeonites had heard what the Israelites had done, these kings had also. In verse 2, he feared greatly because Gibeon was a great city, one of the royal cities, and because it was greater than Ai, and all its men were warriors. So Adonizedek, king of Jerusalem, sent to Hoham, king of Hebron, and to Piram, king of Jarmuth, and Japhethiah, king of Lachish, and to Debir, king of Eglon. Pronounce those words better than I did, okay? All right, so these kings are, they're down here in this, if you look on your map, here's a few places here. This is the five kings that it mentions there. And so they say, Gibeon, that's a great city. So let's make an alliance and go up there and whip those Gibeonites. Mo? Go ahead.
Four, that the Gibeonites say that God told Moses that he would give the land into their hand. So the Gibeonites knew all of this.
Yep.
It appears that Moses, back before they even crossed the land, interesting that the Gibeonites knew all that, and they didn't have to tell them.
Right, yeah. That is an interesting point, and we only touched on it when we were talking about Rahab. These people have heard... I'm getting an echo, I don't know. These people have heard, the people in the land here have heard about, can I even see that red dot? They've heard about these Israelites, and they've heard that Moses was told that God was going to give them the land, et cetera, et cetera. So it's kind of interesting that news travels, and they didn't have TV. But one thing, too, it's this territory of Israel down to Egypt, it's 70 miles is kind of a long journey, but not for us. I mean, we can go to 70 miles in a hurry here, and we, of course, got all kind of electronics to get message across. But anyway, the message has gotten to the people in the land, and the Gibeonites knew, and so did these five kings. So they make an alliance. And what do these five kings do in this alliance or with this alliance? They go up and they're going to take Gibeon. We're going to take that city down. And so, well, the Gibeonites are in a tough place. They've got armies of five kings besieging or going to besiege their city. And what's their plan?
Pull out the trump card,
which is
Joshua
and the people covenant they made. Pardon?
The covenant people, yeah.
Oh, we've made a covenant with those Israelites that have done all this conquering on the east side and Ai and Jericho. So let's appeal to them. So they sent to Joshua and said, here's the situation. Come up and help us. And this is where the Israelites said, we made a covenant with them. Now tell me if I'm not telling the story correctly. We made a covenant with them, so we need to honor that covenant and go up there and help them. So is that what they did?
Yes.
Did God say go ahead, or did God reassure them? Yeah. God says, yeah, you made your covenant, so go and do it. That's verses, I saw it, verses 1 through 7 of chapter 10. And an interesting thing happened. Joshua and the people, on their way up there, and it took a little, you know, it's not all that far, but from Gilgal down here, I can't even see that red dot. There it is. Gilgal right there. They're going to go over here to Gibeon. That's where the fine king's going to. And so they go over there. Joshua said, we're going to run out of daylight. We're going to have to fight these kings. I'm highly paraphrasing, of course. And I might have left something out, so you let me know if I left something out. So Joshua says, we need more daylight. So what did he do? In order to defeat these five kings and their armies,
they marched all night.
They marched all night, but then when they get up there and in the battle, Joshua says, we're going to have more daylight to defeat these kings. And so Joshua said, he prayed to God?
No.
No?
Well, he may have, but he said to the Lord. Yeah, he spoke to the Lord.
Okay. He said to the Lord. This time he appeals to God, at least talks to him. We need more daylight. And what happened? The sun stood still. Did anything else stand still? The sun and the moon. And so the daylight was increased, and the Israelites were able to defeat these five kings. Okay, that was another thing. A little help. Mine says rocks from heaven. And I don't know where there's hailstones as we think of frozen water, or whether it was actually rocks. So God helped them in two ways. He gave them more. He extended the day. And how many people? I keep getting an echo. Am I hearing it? Or is it? Yeah. The people were fighting. Let's see now. I started to say. I made myself lose some thought when I heard that echo. I was going to mention that the people, the people were fighting with the five kings and their armies, but it says that more died from the hailstones than from the hand of the Israelites. Kelly, go ahead.
Well, I don't mean to hasten us to the end of this, but I just happen to love what verse 14 says. There's never been a day like it before or since. A day when the Lord listens to a man. Surely the Lord is fighting for Israel.
Yes, I'm glad you brought it up, because I may have forgotten that. Let's look at that thought, and we'll come back to the hailstones and the daylight and so on. That was verse 17, wasn't it? 14 rather. Let's go ahead and read, beginning with verse 12. At that time, Joshua spoke to the Lord in the day when the Lord gave the Amorites over to the sons of Israel. And he said in the sight of Israel, "Sun, stand still at Gibeon, and moon in the valley of Aijalon." And the sun stood still, and the moon stopped, until the nation took vengeance on their enemies. Is it not written in the book of Jasher? The sun stopped in the midst of heaven and did not hurry to set about for a whole day. There has been no day like it before since, when the Lord heeded the voice of a man, for the Lord fought for Israel. You think a man or woman, that mankind, can have an influence on God?
Moses did all the time.
Yeah.
Well, not all the time, but like when he had to.
And right. And it's through what?
Faith.
It's through faith, but what did their faith cause them to do?
Be bold.
Be bold and? Ask or pray to God, right? And so there hasn't been a day before or after this like unto this one. So what does that mean? The moon and the sun have never stood still like this since that day, right? Ken, go ahead. Ted, go ahead.
Well, of course, obviously, the earth would have had to stand still.
That's my next question. This is one of those things that atheists, agnostics, whatever you want to call them, so-called scientists, say, looky there. The earth didn't stand still. I mean, the sun didn't stand still. The earth quit rotating. So what?
It still made the sun stand
still. It still made more daylight. I don't care which way it happened. And
it would look like the sun was standing still, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So it's not moving anyway. Yeah.
From a human perspective.
Yes. I mean, God could have done it any way he wanted to. Whether he made the earth quit rotating or whether he just, whatever. And that's where the atheists they don't have enough faith to understand God can do anything he wants to. Quickly, Ken, we will.
Go. It was the Creator that made it happen.
Yeah.
As a result of what Joshua and Israel had done.
Yeah.
And still, we looked at it as if they should not have greeted those guys and made a covenant with them.
Yeah. Yep, and we'll talk about those ungodly people in the last part of this lesson next week. Ted, go ahead.
This is a little fact point. You know, the centuries people thought that the earth was the center of the universe, and the sun actually revolved around the earth. They may have gotten that idea from these verses right here.
It could have been in the medieval days before Galileo. Is that the guy that decided? But these people back then might have known what we know today. You ever think about that? I don't know if they did or not. But maybe you talk about the Babylonians, the Chinese, and the science that they knew before medieval days? I don't know. Okay. Pardon me? The Egyptians, yeah. So what happened then? So more killed of these five kings than the Israelites killed, and they what did they do with the kings? Five kings.
They hid out in the cave, so they closed the cave until the battle was over, and then they brought them out.
Okay, Joshua says those kings over there hid in the cave. Put rocks over it. And so later then he says, now all right, go back and take those kings out of the cave. Bring them out here. And what did Joshua do with them? Or did he do it?
Yes, he did.
He did. What was that that Joshua did? He killed them. And then what did they do with them?
Hung them on a tree.
That's gross. Okay, and Kelly points out, and they took him down from the tree, the pole, that's what and they put him back dead in the cave and put the rock over it. And when did they do this? And that's kind of a... Before sundown. Is that have you ever heard anything about that before? You got it in your lesson there, Deuteronomy 21, 22, and 23 at the bottom. Don't leave a body hanging on a tree overnight. Did that happen in New Testament days?
Yes, by Christ. He was taken down to the cross and buried.
Right. All the way back there in the Old Testament, that was the instructions, and that's what the Jews wanted done when Christ was... died on the cross. Okay, our time's almost gone. At the top of page 2, number 3. The southern campaign, Joshua takes successfully the cities, and we've got them here. It's the cities that these guys from the 12 tribes, there's one of them. That's the first one that's mentioned here, whatever you pronounce it, Makeda. The second one is Lebanon. Can you see that red dot? And Lachish. I know where Lachish is right here, and Eglon is right there, and Hebron is over here, and Debir is there. So they go and take all of these kings in their land Joshua took at one time because the Lord God of Israel fought for Israel. And number 6 says, trace on a map, and that's what I just did. Why did Joshua slaughter everyone in these cities? That's a question here, and that's part of the question on the rest of the lesson we'll talk about next week. Why did, and it says he slaughtered everyone. Let's read it. Chapter 10, verse 28. Make sure I'm in chapter 10 here. As for Makkedah, Joshua captured it, struck it, so forth. He devoted it to destruction, and he did the king of Makkedah just as he had done the king of Jericho. And it goes on and says the same thing for all five of these guys. Then Joshua, let's see, verse 40, chapter 10. Joshua struck the whole land, the hill country, the Negeb, and the lowland, and the slopes, and all their kings. He left nothing remaining but devoted to destruction all that breathed, just as the Lord God of Israel commanded. And Joshua struck them from Kadesh Barnea as far as Gaza, and all the country of Goshen as far as Gibeon. And Joshua captured all of these kings in their land at one time, because the Lord God of Israel fought for Israel. Then Joshua returned, and all Israel with him, to the camp at Gilgal. So what have we done? We've seen that he helped the Gibeonites because of a covenant, and then he's conquered or taken these kings here in the southern part. We haven't gone north yet, have we? So, oh, time's gone. One other thought, make sure that go ahead and study as Gail did the rest of the lesson. And I have Bible Bites number 6 here, and it quotes Joshua 11, verse 15. Just as the Lord commanded Moses, his servant, so Moses commanded Joshua, so Joshua did. He left nothing undone of all the Lord had commanded Moses. So I want to hand this out to you, and we'll look at it maybe next week. Among several lessons, perhaps, of this chapter 9 and 10, inquire of God, speak to God about it first. Don't make a rash covenant. It might be another lesson that we didn't really touch on. But when you make a covenant or a vow, keep it if it's righteous. Some vows may not be, and that's what they were doing in Testament days, and ask in faith.
Right.
That's three things. Is there anything else? Think of as lessons that we need to remember as they did. And if not, go ahead and read the rest of lesson 3, which actually not the rest of it, because we're not going to look at page 2. But we want to look beginning at page 3, middle of page 3, down page 3, and on the back. And go ahead and read those Bible bites, that Bible bite, number 6. And if there's something on it that we need to discuss with chapter 11, then we can do so. Thanks for your comments, questions. We'll stop there.